This is The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167.
Hello and welcome to The Feed with Amber Mack.
And Michael B. for everything new now and next.
We have you covered for what's happening in the world of tech and what's trending online.
On the show, we talk about the latest health and fitness updates from Apple's big event.
Plus, why Microsoft is dropping some employee clauses that will give staff more freedom to work.
Also on the show, summer is around the corner, so we have a new shark sighting app coming to a coast near you.
And we tell you how to get better book recommendations with a trendy new digital download.
That's all coming up right here on The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B.
Trending up.
Summer's in the air. It is very bright and sunny where I am at the moment. I'm very lucky. I'm in Halifax. It is a gorgeous part of the world on the east coast of Canada near your hometown. Well, it's a hop, skip, and a jump from your hometown, Amber.
It sure is. And it's about a 3-hour drive to Charlottetown from Halifax. And I went to school in Halifax and both my brothers live in Halifax. And it's just a spectacular city, very walkable. I've been encouraging you, Michael, to get out and walk. So I hope you've taken some of my advice.
Well, I have. Thankfully, you spoke to me at the beginning of the week when I landed here to do some work, and I did take your advice, and the harbor is beautiful. Just walking along the boardwalk this afternoon after we do the show, I'm going to go in. There's a couple of spots that you recommended. I'm going to go and have a little mosey, but it is a beautiful city, super lovely people. So if anyone ever gets lucky enough to be able to visit, I highly recommend it.
It is awesome. And speaking of one of my brothers, he actually does work with us at Amberback Media, and he wrote this really great blog post over on my site about Apple's WWDC event, which just took place. This is the Worldwide Developers Conference, which is a place where Apple basically releases software news to the world of developers, but really also to the everyday person. There were a bunch of different updates, Michael, but I wanted to just focus for a second on the health features. Specifically, medications tracking. This is a new feature that will allow people to more easily track their medication. And I didn't realize this, but apparently about 50% of people take prescription medications. So now you're able to take a picture of that medication, store it on your phone, find out what drugs could potentially interact with that medication, and even share that health information with your family, which is super good if you have aging parents. I think this is the type of thing that really makes health tech that much more useful.
I think you're absolutely right, because it is difficult to keep track, especially if you also want to, as you mentioned, if you have aging parents, keeping their independence. So helping them with some tools that they can still manage themselves and their health is, I think, fantastic. Another one that was interesting, which I think we're going to see more and more of this, is a lot more features within the devices or existing devices we already have. So the Apple Watch on the Run, I like this because it's starting to get a little bit more detailed into the actual mechanics of running. So it's able to look at your stride length, ground contact time, all of the things. If you're a serious runner, if you're trying to improve your running and your health and your overall fitness, it's starting to give you more data that you can sift through and try and improve from a long-term perspective.
Yeah, this is amazing. And you know, people may think, well, I mean, how many people actually run? But there are a lot of serious runners. But I even like this idea that it will help you keep your heart rate at a certain point if you want to be able to better monitor that while you're running to make sure you're in a zone where you want to be. So again, I think when it comes to Apple, they really do some amazing work on the health front. And these are just a couple of simple examples. There's more information over on my blog. Now, Michael, I thought you would like this next story because I can't stand non-compete clauses, NDAs.
Well, can I just say, before we get to NDAs, this is my principles for life. If somebody asks you to sign an NDA or doesn't allow social media an event, probably shouldn't attend or interact, because clearly it seems shady. That's just an overall generalization. Now let's continue with Microsoft.
Yeah, I mean, in some cases, it could make sense if it's a product release and you want to keep it from
people. From a business perspective, sure.
But with employees, I think you're right. I think it really starts to break down the trust that people want within that capacity of working for an employer. So I was really excited to see that Microsoft has announced, according to Engadget, that they are dropping their non-compete clauses and NDAs from from employee settlements. So this means that this is not true for their senior level people, but for most people who work at Microsoft, that they will be able to potentially, you know, after they leave Microsoft, they can go work for Google, they can go work for Facebook and or Meta, I should say. And this is allowing them the freedom to do so, because at the end of the day, you don't need a big tech company like this really infringing on the rights of an individual to be able to make a living.
Well, I think that's the key. I mean, obviously, it depends on the certain level you are within an organization and the types of things that you're privy to. But in general, a blanketed non-compete clause can be quite difficult. And you kind of can end up preventing people from earning a livelihood. And so, of course, most people, you know, go to jobs that are similar to the ones that they were in previously. So obviously, it makes sense. I do like that Microsoft in general, again, it's a bit of a generalization, but, you know, they seem to always be moving in the right direction when it comes to their employees and evolving with the times compared to other tech giants. Is that safe to say?
Yes. I mean, if you follow their CEO, Satya Nadella, he is an incredible leader. And I'm not saying that this came directly from him, but there is sort of a different path forward for Microsoft under his leadership. And this is a great example of that.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, I mean, it's just different and it's reflective of the times, right? And it's relevant to people who I think really believe that they want to be able to also have a life outside of work. And this is sort of a new thing that's come about where I think this has to be taken more seriously by many of the larger employers, not just across the country, but around the world.
Absolutely. Now, what does need to be taken seriously is combating infinite scrolling.
Yes. If you use TikTok, like my 13-year-old, it's like watching television. He kind of binges on TikTok and I watch him kind of scroll endlessly. And I want to say things to him, but then I realize I'm beside him doing it on Twitter and he calls it that the old person's TikTok.
That's so crazy that you're having a conversation with him and he's sitting right there, but through social.
Right. And I was excited to see that TikTok has announced a series of new features that allow you to basically manage your screen time more effectively. So you can set sort of limits that when you're reminded that you've been scrolling for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever it might be. And for any kids or teens ages 13 to 17, like my son, then after 100 minutes of usage, it will prompt you to set screen time limits. Now, personally, while a kid is in school, 100 minutes is a long time every day on TikTok. So I wish they would lower that a little bit.
All right. But you know what? I was just about to say, though, isn't it remarkable that TikTok has moved in this direction, regardless on the limits they put on it, and yet we've found other platforms kind of doing the opposite and trying to keep them as long as possible scrolling and using their platforms. So regardless on the limit, I think that at least someone at TikTok is aware and trying to work out a balance and looking at what is detrimental and what's not and what's healthy for their users. So I think that's at least a positive.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, why not go one step further? And since you're in the business of micro video, why not create some little micro videos that are 5 seconds long that say, hey, maybe it's time for a mental health break. Why don't you go outside? Wait a second. That would actually be too effective.
Okie dokie, stay with us. When we return, we dive into the latest high-tech gifts for dads and grads with Mark Sulford.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167. Power Friend.
You're listening to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. June is a time to celebrate dads and grads, and you may be considering gadgets or games as gift ideas. From virtual sports titles and electric scooters, pretty cool, to sleek laptops and TVs. There's something for all tastes and budgets. And of course, to learn more, we're joined by our friend and tech expert, Mark Saltzman. Hey, Mark, it's a pleasure to have you on the show as always.
Likewise. Thanks so much for having me, Michael and Amber. Always great to chat with you guys.
All right. So, Mark, first question for you is, I think what we're all thinking about this summer after a turbulent couple of years is how can we have some fun. So what technology is out there to allow us to have fun, play games just in time for summer?
Yeah, having fun and connecting with family and friends as well. Yeah, so we'll start off with something for nostalgic gamers. If you remember Nintendo Wii Sports from, say, 15 years ago, well, it's back in a way with Nintendo Switch Sports. Same idea, but playable on the Nintendo Switch console. So this lets you virtually play a bunch of sports games using the Joy-Con controllers in your hands, those motion controllers. So you can play bowling and tennis and volleyball, badminton, and more by swinging like a virtual club or hitting a virtual ball with that motion. And it's great. You know, parents love it too, because the kids are getting exercise as well. So you can play by yourself if you like against the game, or with someone beside you, or online. You know about the versatility of the Nintendo Switch system. I know you've chatted about it on the feed before, so you can play on the go, or you can dock it and play on your big screen TV as well. So that's Nintendo Switch Sports, and it's $49.99 for the digital version for a download. But if you buy the physical copy of the game, it's a tad more. You also get a leg strap accessory, so you strap that on and you can kick a soccer ball. And it's so fun. Anyways, that's Nintendo Switch Sports. And then for the computer gamers who tune into the feed, and I know many do, they know that Razer's Black Widow series is one of the most iconic mechanical gaming keyboards on the market. And now there's the Black Widow V3 loaded with new features. Again, you plug it into your laptop or desktop, and it's powered by Razer Chroma. That's that backlighting where it's like 16.8 million customizable color options that can go in sync with the game. Or when you load your favorite game, it'll automatically show you the hotkeys for that particular game. So it's practical and colorful, and it's really tough. Those keycaps are really tough. They can withstand use and abuse as gamers for prolonged use. It's $169. It includes a wrist rest, by the way, for ergonomics and comfort. And that's the Razer Black Widow V3.
That's excellent. And practical and colorful is always a good thing to look out for when we're looking for gifts. Now, what about, I know the summer's coming and everyone's going to be outside, but if you're like me, I do like catching a good show on television. And actually, I just went through this. It was quite overwhelming trying to find a really good laptop. I had to replace my laptop after 7 years. So you've got some suggestions for those people that are out for a good bargain and good quality television and or laptop.
Yeah, thanks. So we'll start with that laptop. It's on sale for $300 off. It's the HP Envy X360. So it's a versatile laptop that is, as the name suggests, it's on a 360-degree hinge. So you bend back that 15-inch high-def screen and it becomes a tablet. Or you can put it in tent mode if you want to prop it up and stream a movie on a rainy Sunday this summer. Or you can bring it outside. It's, again, it's got this like really great anti-glare screen. So it's a two-in-one or touchscreen laptop or convertible laptop for work or play. And it's got solid-state drive storage instead of a hard drive. It's 1 terabyte. It's got Wi-Fi 6 for fast internet. And I love the security features. It's got a physical camera shutter and a microphone mute button, which can both get you out of trouble when you're on Zoom and you forget to make some adjustments. So it's $1049 instead of $1399. So it's $350 off rather, HP Envy X360. My math is terrible. And then for the larger screen, Michael, you were talking about a new TV. It can be overwhelming to shop for one. The new LG C2 OLED TV is gorgeous. I mean, it's the follow-up to last year's best-selling premium television, the C1. And new for 2022 is this 42-inch size. You can go bigger if you want, but this might be perfect for dad's man cave or for a grad's gaming setup. You could be using it as a monitor, and it's fast. So speaking of games, it's got 1 millisecond response times, which not a lot of TVs have. So super important to look for that. It's slim because it's, you know, self-lighting pixels like other OLED televisions, amazing contrast. It also has Dolby Vision and LG Evo support, both of which contribute to better brightness and contrast. And yeah, it's a 4K TV. It's $1,848 for this LG C2 OLED television, which just came out in June.
Very cool. Okay, so if you have spent some time watching your favorite screen, whether it's TV or your laptop, one of the things I think a lot of us are thinking about is what tech can I use to get outside and enjoy the great outdoors?
Yeah. So one would be great for homes and cottages. It's a phone, it's a cell phone signal booster. It doesn't have to just use work with your phone. It can use anything that leverages cellular connectivity. And this is a multi or omnidirectional rather antenna that you place outside your home or cabin or cottage. And it significantly enhances the cell phone reception inside or around the property up to 3,500 square feet for this model, which is called the SureCall Flare 3.0 signal booster. So it's also great for RVing, by the way, or camping. You just you connect this and then it will help with calls, text, and data. You don't have any of those embarrassing dropped or missed calls anymore if you're trying to work from a summer home by a lakefront property. It's ideal for 4G or 5G phones. It doesn't matter the kind of phone you use or who your carrier is. It even works with those little mobile hotspots to get you online through your laptop or what have you. It's $499 for the SureCall Flare 3.0 signal booster. And then finally, speaking of getting outdoors, this is my first time trying an electric scooter and I'm having a blast. In particular, it's the Xiaomi e-scooter. It's the Mi electric scooter Pro 2. It's got this minimalist design, super light, but durable. It goes up to 25 kilometers an hour and the battery lasts up to 45 kilometers between charges. What I like, the geek in me likes it. It also connects to the Mi Home app. So you can check, you know, your riding speed and remaining power and other information on your phone. And it just takes 3 seconds to fold it up and put it away. So it's the Xiaomi Mi electric scooter Pro 2. It's a Best Buy exclusive on sale for $849. It's usually $999, but they have like an introductory price for $150 off.
That is so cool. All of these things are cool, but the electric scooter I especially love because we have an electric scooter that my son was using and he loved it. And just, you know, again, just to get kids outside, I love this idea. I shouldn't say little kids because you don't want to put a tiny on an electric scooter.
That is true.
But the older kids for sure.
Or is that a height joke against me, Amber?
You don't want to put marks on the tiny. On this thing. No. Hey, I think, you know, you're definitely not short, especially coming from someone who is barely 5'4". All right. So Mark, where can people go just to follow all of your great tech advice and roundups? It's hard to keep up with where you are at all the time. So where's the best place?
Thank you so much. Yeah. So I'm on social media. It's Mark Saltzman, Mark with the C. And I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube. And I write a tech tip of the day. I link to videos, including the products that we just chatted about. You can see them in action. And I also link to my podcast called Tech It Out.
Very cool. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Amber and Michael. Be well.
Up next, how to find new books with an app, and it's Apptastic. We've got 3 apps ready for you.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Apptastic.
Welcome to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. This week's Apptastic segment is powered by Ecobee. Ecobee just launched their best thermostats yet, including a beautiful new design both inside and out. The all-new Smart Thermostat Premium and Smart Thermostat Enhanced includes a refreshed user interface and Ecobee's most advanced sensor technology to date with radar. Plus, Smart Thermostat Premium is the only smart thermostat with both an indoor air quality monitor, which is so cool, and a smart speaker with your choice of Alexa or Siri, all encased in a stunning metal body. Now, if you're looking to save up to 26% on your annual heating and cooling costs, which is something I think everybody wants, head on over to Ecobee's website to invest in your comfort, home health, and security needs. Ecobee's products are built to last in your home, not in a landfill, and the software is upgradable, so you'll always get the newest features and updates on their latest devices. All right, so Ecobee has an app that you can use along with their smart thermostats, and we have a few apps that we want to share this week. Michael, I wanted to talk about this one that I have to be clear is not out yet, but you can go on the waiting list, and it's called Tertulia. And the idea behind it, I just read about it in the New York Times, is that it is a better way to discover books that are recommended by people you trust, what books are trending, keep track of books you want to read and share. And one of the ways that I saw this described, Michael, which I think is really interesting, is most of the times now, if you're buying books, you may go to Amazon where they're recommending books for you, but there's not really an alternative to that Amazon ecosystem for recommendations. So Tertulia wants to be just that.
Yeah, I thought this was really neat because also I find now a lot of people get and find their books that they end up reading across social media and podcasts and the web. And it's actually quite difficult to find one place to get those recommendations. So I like the idea about the way they're going about recommending this and you're being able to discover new reading material.
Yes, absolutely. And the thing is that I think people want to be able to get recommendations from people they trust. And I think Amazon does fill that void at times, but there is something about the algorithms constantly recommending things. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I think there is room in this space for something else. And so if you create this really great reading community, which is basically what they're trying to do, then I think people will love this idea, especially going into summer and knowing that so many people are reading more during the summertime. And this is a really great fit. So you can go and you can basically submit your email to the Tertulia website and join their list so you can get information when the app launches. But I feel like this is going to be a good one.
Absolutely. Well, our next one. So everyone's familiar with Chromebooks, which of course are used by students all across the place. And now they actually have a new screen recorder app. And now it's called a Screencast, and you can use your cam to record yourself while browsing and demoing, which would be really helpful when it comes to all of your schoolwork, even presentations in the workplace. It's in experimental mode right now, but you can also annotate the screen while you're doing it, which of course in real time is fantastic. And speaking of real time, there's also, it creates transcripts as well. So at the moment, I find it very difficult to do, you know, two or three of those features or functions when I'm working. I have to use two or three different apps and they're not integrated. So I like the idea that Screencast is able to do that all in one place.
Yes, it's very, very cool. And I watched a video demo of it where you really get the sort of gist of how it works. And there are so many scenarios where it would make sense to do something like this, whether it's a kid doing a presentation in school or maybe you're doing a presentation at work. And also, I think with Chromebooks, I mean, we've talked about Chromebooks before. They're just so affordable now. We're talking $300, $400 for a decent Chromebook. So it's neat to see the evolution of the technology that is also available for them. So the last app we wanted to talk about is called Sharktivity, and it's an amazing app that will help you if you are in the Cape Cod or South Shore area of Massachusetts to basically raise awareness about the presence of white sharks off the coast. Now, Michael, it's interesting because you come from Australia.
So you don't need to tell me. I remember the first time I realized that shark nets don't actually go all the way to the bottom of the ocean or in front of the beach. And I did not go in the ocean for a couple of months. So I am fearful of the ocean and sharks because in Australia, it's a thing. Like every summer, at least somebody gets bitten or
so scary.
Like, or it's terrifying. So everybody, if you're in this area, download this app. It will save your life and stay away from anything with pointy fins.
Well, we've even noticed in Florida when we're going down there to visit my parents every winter, even in 12 years, I will say the first few years, I mean, I was out boogie boarding all the time. I did have an incident happen to me potentially with
I
some
love
type
this
of
story.
Large
I just
fish.
Love this story. Yeah. But, just, sorry. So when Amber tells me this story, she's like, oh, it's like a large fish. It's this color. It's this one. I'm like, it was a shark.
Okay? I know.
She could have disappeared from the coastline.
I got foot crushed and puncture wounds and all that jazz. So yeah, that was the most terrifying.
She was bitten by a shark the water.
Yeah, I went to the emergency room nearby. I wouldn't recommend going there because they were like, it could have been a jellyfish. I'm like, do you see the puncture wounds
puncture
in my
wound.
Foot?
See
the teeth marks. but nonetheless, here we are. But I will say that I avoided going in the water there for years and years. And you know, we never saw sharks, but the past 3 years, even this winter in March, there was a nurse shark like every few days swimming just on the shore in maybe 12 inches of water.
You know, and what? They're hungry.
Yeah. I mean, the climate's changing, the waters are getting warmer. There's a lot of things happening. So it's not out of the picture that sharks are sort of, you know, moving into different areas. They weren't seen as much before. So,
and you just have to be cautious. That's the thing here, guys. You don't have to be freaked out too much, but Sharktivity, it's a great app. It's got scientific research. It's helping improve public safety. It's got the education component. It helps with sightings, detections, movements, all kinds of stuff to raise awareness, but obviously also be safe and sensible.
Yes, it's very, very cool. Michael, if you want to do a roundup of our apps.
Yeah, so we've got those three fantastic apps. And this week, it was Amber that chose the apps. And I feel that the standard has been raised because they're all very useful, sensible apps. So I am a little bit nervous for my contribution back next week. So we'll see what happens. So we did Tertulia, Screencast, and then, of course, Sharktivity. And of course, if you've got an app, gadget, or product you think we should check out, you can tweet us at AmberMack and at AmBancroft80 and use the hashtag the feed. Coming up, we learn more about the organization called QueerTech, which is working to create a more inclusive tech ecosystem.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. In the Spotlight.
Welcome to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. QueerTech is a Canadian nonprofit that empowers the 2LGBTQ2S+ community to access the tech industry, advance their careers in technology, and launch tech businesses. Joining us now to talk more about this is the CEO at QueerTech. Thanks so much for joining us, Nawufel Testoni. We really appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so I wanted to talk about the early days of QueerTech. From what I understand on the website, it started in Montreal in 2016. Why was this organization started?
Absolutely. So I've been in the tech industry for about 10 years now. And, you know, I've been very involved attending many initiatives. And one of the things I've noticed, I'm a person of color, immigrant, and I would go to a lot of these spaces and notice that there was a huge lack of diversity. And so in the beginning, it really started with me trying to look for a community that's tech and queer to come together and do this. And so that's kind of like where the premise of the organization started.
And when we look at the organization itself, how is the organization helping not only bring together the community so they feel heard and have a safe and inclusive space to network, but how are you also helping companies embrace and create a healthy, safe, and inclusive environment that also helps benefit their own organizations?
So, we always looked at it at a two-side coin, right? We said we need to help the community to connect with each other, build that network to strengthen and get jobs into the tech industry. We see it as an opportunity for the community. We want to increase wealth within the community as a whole and grow as a community, and tech and entrepreneurship is a great way to do that. So we want to pave the path for them. But we realize also while we're doing that, we want to make sure that they go and work in a safe space environment. So we work with a lot of companies on different programs. We do employability training programs. Hiring is something that we train companies on how to do interviews, especially with trans and non-folks people, and kind of just really help them through navigate that process. And then once they get in, there is a lot of recommendation we tell companies to do in terms of increasing awareness within the company. I do a lot of talks to employees to discuss a little bit different opportunities on how to be inclusive as a company. We talk a lot about launching mentorship programs for companies and helping them support underrepresented groups. So these are different things that companies can do and we recommend for them to do.
I wanted to ask you just about the benefits of having more diverse voices at the table when it comes to the future of technology. This is a space that we have covered for a long time on the feed. And I think we all recognize that it's important to have different perspectives. Can you talk about how this organization really, you know, of course, it's about making people feel included, but it's really also helping to ensure that the technology that's developed and put out there into the world, again, is also inclusive?
No, so I, as we look at technology today, it touches every aspect of our life, right? We run our lives with our phones, computers, apps, everything. And for us, it's like when companies are creating product for the community, for society, you're creating it for everyone. And in order to be able to do that effectively, you want to have all the voices present on the table, because otherwise you'll have a blind spot and you don't know really certain communities and you might forget things. We've had so many examples either with, you know, AI getting created from data sets that were not inclusive and the impact it can have on that community. So it's really important as we develop this product that it takes in consideration all the communities that are represented in our society. I think it's also important for companies to think about the product they're creating. You know, we talk a lot about new data sets, including that into research and AI products, and also having inclusive data sets is really important. And in order to do that, you need to have these communities represented on the table so they can look at this data set and cover the blind spot that these companies might have.
I'm actually really curious, given obviously the huge impact COVID-19 has had on the workforce in the last 2 years, and a lot of us working remotely, how has that impacted this particular community? Because, you know, as we're discussing, you know, it's already, you know, a little bit difficult for them in the workforce. And that's why groups like yours exist, to help improve the situation. Have there been any challenges for them working remotely? And how can employees actually help bridge that gap as well?
You know, there were a lot of research that's been done during the pandemic, polling queer communities, and a lot of LGBTQ people have been impacted by the pandemic. Either people have lost their jobs, people have their hours reduced from the work that they've done, and so what we've seen is one, there is like a mindset that's been created where people are looking to upskill, reskill themselves. They are recognizing that, you know, this pandemic has been kind of a wake-up call for people who works in service industries or retail industries, where maybe you don't have a structure for your day and more consistent job hours that you get. So that's really, really important. And so we're seeing more and more queer people approaching queer tech and saying, you know, I want to learn how to code, or I want to get into tech. I want to get a more stable jobs. And so we're trying to really help them kind of navigate that process and make sure that they are getting the support they need so they can integrate this industry.
I have kind of a big question for you, because one of the things I'm thinking about all the time, and maybe I'm spending too much time online, is the attacks we're seeing on progressive views, progressive organizations. So I'm just curious, what can people do to help support groups like Queer Tech?
There's a couple of things people are. I always do raise awareness of the organization. A few things of, you know, sharing the content we create, talk about the organization to your environment is a great way to really spread the support for the organization. It's Pride Month. A lot of people are looking to donate to our nonprofit organization that support these communities. It's always a great way. You can go to queertech.org/donates and support the community. We create also a lot of stories, and we want to tell those stories about queer people in tech. Sharing these stories also is a great way. The more we spread the word, the more we can support our communities.
Well, listen, thank you so much for taking the time. I know you are busy these days, and we just want to thank you for joining us on the feed and helping to raise awareness about queer tech.
Thank you for having me.
Up next, how the Toxic Hush campaign is battling online hate.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167. Techstar.
This is The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. Now, online hate is a growing problem with few good solutions, unfortunately. However, our next guest, Sherry Graydon, is on the team behind the Toxic Hush campaign, which is working hard to make sure that everyone has the right to feel safe online. Now, this is a huge problem, Sherry. We really appreciate you taking the time. So let's start with those people that may not be familiar with the work that the organization does in this particular campaign. Can you share the mission and the purpose specifically for Toxic Hush campaign?
Informed Opinions, the organization I lead, has been amplifying the voices of women in public discourse for the past 13 years. Because we know that women's voices and women with intersectional identities, their voices are even less represented. And that has huge consequences for democracy and the decisions that we make collectively and whose voices get to influence policies and priorities. And what we've discovered over the last couple of years is the increase in online hate specifically directed at women is really threatening to erode equality gains that have taken decades to achieve. And so the Toxic Hush campaign is really an effort to underline and demonstrate the nature of the abuse that women are experiencing, and more importantly, the impact on them, on their freedom of speech, on their ability to work, to engage online, to share their informed opinions. So that's essentially the goal, and really to make clear that responsibility for dealing with the attacks cannot lie with the women themselves.
It's a really good point. And I think we see that as we're constantly focused on messaging of what a woman should do if they are facing some of these attacks. And so the onus is on that woman to be able to change their behavior. And I do find it fascinating in terms of seeing how big of an issue this is. I wanted to talk for a second about a survey that you just did. And I was really blown away to see that 88% of the respondents of that survey noticed an increase in online hate since 2020. Do you know exactly what is causing this? I think many of us, myself included, see it happening, but what was the tipping point?
I think there are a whole confluence of factors. You know, certainly what's been going on south of the border over the last 5 years since Donald Trump was elected, and the rise in white supremacy organizations, that I think is playing a role. The emboldening of people whose views previously would not have been so much a part of public discourse has really contributed. I think the pandemic also has made a difference because we're all living more of our lives online instead of in actual contact with each other. And the anonymity of the internet has also facilitated and emboldened people who might previously not have expressed the kind of things that we're seeing are now able to do so more frequently, more easily, and with no consequence.
Well, speaking of consequence, I guess that's my problem or where I sit. I don't understand how we are where we are today viewing what is disseminated online. There's no repercussions, it seems, or there's no accountability. So I guess my question is, what policies or what laws need to change or happen to ensure the safety and security of not only women online, but children and minorities and those groups that, you know, are having to deal with death threats and this horrible place online that's perpetuating, you know, a very negative and unsafe environment across the globe?
Yeah, it's not an easy thing to wrestle with. And one of the things that we've done with this People's Tribunal is bring together experts and women who are themselves experiencing this to talk about the nature and the impact of the online hate that they're being targeted with. But then we have three citizen judges who are really unpacking exactly what you've referenced, Michael, and the complexity of how do you do that with regulation, with, from a government's perspective. And right now, our federal government is developing a regulatory response. And with the tribunal and the analyses that we're sharing, we're really hoping to influence the Canadian government's process to ensure that the experiences of diverse women are reflected and that there's a rich understanding of how that intersects with the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedom. So Senator Kim Pate speaks to that. Dean Donna Young from the Lincoln Alexander Law School at Toronto Metropolitan University, she actually lays out six legal principles that need to be considered. So I'm not saying it's easy, but it's really clear that something needs to be done. And
but it's possible is what you're saying, which I think is the key here. It's difficult, but it is possible.
It is absolutely possible. And of course, you're right. It's not going to be easy. And one of the challenges with the previous legislation that was tabled and then critiqued was that it put all of those things that you mentioned, you know, the abuse of children, images online, doxing, terrorist threats. It tried to do a one-size-fits-all solution. And these are really complex issues. So we're hoping to inform that regulatory response and really help people understand the bigger picture consequences and that it's worth taking the time to get this right.
Sherry, we have just about a minute left, and I feel as though I've left the big question to the end, so I apologize for that. But I do want to get your perspective just on the consequences of not solving these problems.
Yeah, the consequences, you know, our focus is the extent to which women are being driven from public conversations and crucial fields of influence. And, you know, when you complain to the police, if you have serious, really concrete, serious threats, you typically get told, stay off the internet. And clearly that's not an option for, you know, a majority of the people responding to our survey are online for work-related reasons. And so, you know, you can't be a journalist or a politician or an advocate or, you know, many people without being online. And if every time you turn on your phone or open up your laptop, you are bombarded with threats, insults, you know, references to where your kids go to school, insults, lies that are designed to harm your reputation, that's a critical restriction of women's freedom of speech. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, listen, we want to encourage everybody to check out the Toxic Hush campaign online to learn more about it. And Sherry, we want to thank you for joining us on the feed this week. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
Well, another tough billion-dollar question. Up next, we'll try to answer this billion-dollar question. Is TikTok the new TV?
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Socially Speaking.
It's time now for Socially Speaking. And this week, we are going to dive into a topic that I think is top of mind for a lot of people. And that topic is about the shifting power of broadcast television with the dominance of so many social media communities. And just to put this in context, I was reading an article on BBC's website where they were sharing an update from the recent Johnny Depp and Amber Heard trial. And within the article, they had said, and I'm quoting here, that the number of people watching TV news each evening in America is about 18 million. That's across the country. However, the number of views of videos on TikTok with the hashtag Justice for Johnny Depp is at the time of this writing about 18 billion. I mean,
just say that again. 18
billion. The numbers are just astronomical. And Aaron, we had a chance to chat for a second before the segment, and we were talking about just the shift that is taking place. Do you think that this is, again, sort of another nail in the coffin of broadcast TV?
It might be. It's like so many things, it's generational. Like my son's generation never grew up with a newspaper, never grew up with the 6 o'clock news and 11 o'clock news, never grew up with a lot of things. So they have no inclination to be aware of it or get used to it. And I mean, we don't even have cable anymore, so I can't show them the 6 o'clock news. On the other hand, someone like myself did grow up with those things, and the kind of the paradox is I will go to the Twitter feed of a traditional TV broadcaster, and if it's a big enough event, sometimes they will stream their live TV feed on Twitter or cut up the important clips onto Twitter. So someone like me is still depending on the TV studio and the cameras and the infrastructure, just not watching it on TV. But generationally, I think we'll see that erode.
Yeah, I think there's two things there. I think there's a big distinction that it's not the death of television, it's the death of the way it was distributed. Because I think that content and the actual content people are looking for and watching will remain similar. But to Aaron's point, I think the, you know, most of my news, if it's a huge, you know, if it's a huge news item, I will get to see exactly what I would normally see on television, but just on Twitter or one of the other social platforms, and they live stream it. So it's exactly the same content, just in a different medium. And I think separately, again, traditional television, the way it's distributed, will just be phased out eventually because of exactly that. You know, the younger generation grows up, the norm, they don't distinguish between it. They're like, oh, I just get my content from my phone, and on my phone I have a gazillion choices. Oh, by the way, we used to call those choices social media platforms. So I think that it's just the social media platforms become what network television was, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a fair point. You know, I was just thinking as you were talking, I was going down this long mental rabbit hole to dark places. And I was thinking about the fact that with television, you kind of make a decision to turn to a certain channel, and then you're sort of locked into that channel, right? You know, if you're watching a trial or breaking news or an election or election coverage, you know, you kind of stay in that channel, maybe bounce around a little bit. But what I think is sort of different and maybe more powerful, not always in good ways, is just the fact on TikTok that the algorithm is sort of deciding for you what potentially you should be consuming, where you want to go, and these sort of intentions of that algorithm are not always transparent. So Aaron, maybe I can kind of ask you as a parent, also of a child similar age to mine, how does that make you feel when you think about the influence of algorithms in our society?
Yeah, that makes me a little bit scared. And I think that's goes to the larger issue of how people consume their social media. And some forms are all algorithm, like you mentioned. Some are like TikTok. Some are largely algorithmic, like Instagram. And then some of them have a toggle like Twitter. And I think that may be generational also. I prefer algorithmic and seeking out the content. My son doesn't mind having the content fed to him. And then I just wonder about if you know, your thumb slips one time and you don't click do not recommend, you just let it go by, you go eh, then more things that you initially didn't want to recommend could show up just because you didn't click it to not recommend it once, and they could start flooding your feed, and then you don't even know it. Do you know what I mean?
Well, just to play devil's advocate, though, isn't the algorithm just at scale a news director? So if you think about it, and if we just take the analogy of the 6 o'clock news, you know, you did used to choose to sit down and watch it, and there was nothing else to kind of take your focus away, and you would, you know, watch the television, you wouldn't do a million other things, but a news, you know, editor or somebody chose those stories and chose the way that they would be told. So now you've got algorithms that do that on steroids, except now there's way more choices.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's quite a few differences, but I think the main one that I think about is the fact that in the business of news in broadcast television or print or wherever that might be, there are certain sort of standards that you need to adhere to. I think one of
Are there? No, just kidding.
Well, there are in terms of what you can say, and you can get your wrist slap and your news license taken away. And this really actually goes back to the issue that we have with social media right now, is that there just is no government regulation. And even saying those two terms together, I recognize that I might get hate tweets. But nonetheless, I think that's the real issue, is that if the algorithm decides that the algorithm wants to be able to reach and amplify content to billions of people,
there should be some kind of regulation and framework around that.
Yeah, because there's TV can't even do that. They can't even think of doing that at the scale and with that amplifying factor that the technology algorithms have. I mean, again, remember the numbers, 18 million people across the country versus 18 billion video views. Like the scale and the impact is much more significant.
Well, I think that's the difference, though. Like, I don't view social media as free speech and all of that stuff. I believe that they do have some kind of responsibility, and it's because I go to those platforms for news. So I expect and think there should be some kind of parameters around not allowing, detrimental content and hurtful, harmful content and all of those things. But there's some people that believe that and some don't. So I guess I view social media as a tool, and there should be very similar to like news and content. But you're right, at scale, and that obviously gets into a whole nother discussion, because obviously there's lots of people that don't believe that. So I definitely don't think it's going to be solved anytime soon, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think you're right. All right. Well, listen, Socially Speaking is all about finding out what you think. So you can tweet at us at Amber Mack and at mbancroft80. And Aaron, where can people tweet at you about their thoughts about this?
I'm on Twitter at my name, Aaron Papernick, Aaron with one A.
This is The Feed, Amber Mack and Michael B on SiriusXM Canada Talks, channel 167.